The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another award-winning Kiefer and Curry show here on the TKR app. You can find this show all over the place on, of course, our brand new YouTube channel. You can also hear it, of course, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're available on every major industry out there. It's the Kiefer and Curry show. And, of course, we run this show at least five times a week on the TKR app where it runs fresh every single week. So make sure you check it out and get after it. You know, Kip, as long as we've had sports, we've had cheating. And you just said it to me before we actually started the show. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. I don't know who said that first, but it's so true. We've always pushed the envelope. And you just look at cheating scandals in sports, everything from secondary violations in college football to Spygate, Deflategate, banging trash lids in Major League Baseball. We've had bike doping. We've even had the Spain disabled basketball team in Paralympics actually use a disabled basketball team in order to win a gold medal. We had the Lake Erie walleye tournament just a couple of years ago where guys were putting weights in the bottom of their fishes in order to win cash. Cheating has been as relevant and prevalent in sports as it has ever been. And now all of a sudden, a brand new cheating element has hit college football again. Connor Stallions, who is a Michigan staffer we have found, has bought some 30 tickets to 11 different games in the Big Ten. They have found out that he has bought tickets on both sides of individual stadiums, including Ohio State and Penn State. And of course, he's bought these tickets to watch film. They actually saw the people who took the tickets from him. He transferred and they're holding their phone up their entire game. They're actually taking film of game time, which I didn't was not aware that was actually cheating. In-game stealing, this is funny, because in-game stealing is not prohibited under NCAA rules. But if you get anything before you actually play a game, then that's considered cheating. And I wanted to get into cheating in sports with technology. Is it really that big of a deal? And I wanted to talk to you about it this morning. What's your overall thoughts on cheating in sports?
Well, like you said, it's a fine line because being adept at figuring out what the other team's doing, and if you're doing that in baseball, it's an art form. I used to be one of those guys that could really just eyeball a third base coach, and usually at the levels that I played, it was not very sophisticated. By the fifth or sixth minute of the game, you could pretty much unravel every sign that he's given his hitters.
Yeah.
And mostly it was for stolen bases that you were trying to pick up that signal so you could kind of tip your pitcher off to throw over or maybe even pitch out. But sign stealing in baseball is an art form. Now, the Houston Astros in 2017 and 18 took that to a different level with the introduction of the video replay, where they had sophisticated equipment right down in the tunnel of the bench with a technician sitting at a screen watching every transmission, some of it generated by baseball itself, to look for plays that they wanted to challenge. But they took it to another level. Stealing signs is not usually a video tech's job to do, and he conveys it to the bench where this was the ultimate cheating, Tony, because this was the most high-tech form of cheating ever, getting it from sophisticated equipment, but the most low-tech conveyance to the hitter of the signals of pounding trash can lids once, twice, or three times to indicate what kind of pitch the catcher had just called. But it was that instantaneous. And they got away with it for almost 2 years. Don't you think people banging on trash can lids, particularly in places like Oakland, where you can hear a conversation from somebody in the upper deck, don't you think somebody might have put two and two together before? I blame the opponents as much as the perpetrators there, because that was the mother of all cheating scandals.
There, and it's you know, there's a line here. There's not even a gray area for what I consider cheating and then an art form of cheating. I remember guys, you know, used to steal second base. You'd steal second base not only to get a base, but also so you could see what the catcher was, where the tape was on his thumbs, on his middle fingers, and of course on his pointer fingers to find out exactly what the next pitch was going to be. And again, with technology, to me, I don't consider that cheating. I always say OPE, on time, prepared, and engaged. If you're prepared and you know exactly what your team's going to do. Do you remember the scandal? I forget who it was several years ago where they actually left their play sheet or their game plan in the other team's locker room to see if they would actually utilize that play sheet to find out exactly what, because we know in college football and in professional football, usually the first 10 to 15 plays are actually scripted. Fortunately, for a lot of teams, those seem to be some of the best plays. That's why you see teams run up and down football fields in their first drive and then they fall apart afterwards. I love scripted plays. But you know, it's got to the point now with technology where is it really cheating or is it just taking advantage of a system where, you know, you've got the opportunity to find out exactly what the other team is doing? I don't really consider that cheating at this point.
Well, that's why the introduction of PitchCom now in Major League Baseball is taking place now. How long is it going to be before somebody has a way to download the signals that are going back and forth between the pitcher and catcher? I'm sure that's already in development, but they're trying to take that out. And the college football scandal, Lex Luthor Harbaugh up at Michigan, who's always trying to find an edge, despite having the team that's running roughshod over college football this year. This guy you mentioned that's been going to all the games and filming, and they've got him on surveillance cameras at stadiums all around the Big Ten. They've got him cold on video. This guy is a former military intelligence officer, Tony. So he knows a thing or two probably about a little espionage. This is not just some, you know, Yahoo graduate assistant who majored in sociology. This guy has a background in this stuff.
This is good. It's a good staffing hire is what this is.
Exactly. He's a retired Marine. So he probably was trying to steal signals. And I always give you my little history blast. This all comes from arguably the reason that we're not all speaking German now and eating Wiener Schnitzel every night is because the British brilliantly tricked Hitler into believing that the Normandy invasion was going to be 200 miles north in Calais. And one of the reasons they got away with that was they took a guy who actually was a homeless guy who had died in the morgue, got him all fixed up, put him in a captain's uniform, put some fake plans for the D-Day invasion in his breast pocket, and turned him loose off a ship so he would wash up on the coast of Corsica, which the Germans controlled at the time. And people later on said Hitler was so sure that it was Calais because of that, thinking that guy had fallen overboard and drowned, and they had been gifted with this great plan. So a lot of this, that wasn't really cheating, finding a body with plans, but it is kind of a forerunner and kind of tells you that trickery of all forms. Some might call it cheating, but some might be calling it something else, being successful.
There's a big difference between, and this is the Kiefer and Curry show here on TKR. There's a big difference between out and out cheating, and someone who's in my studio right now just brought to the point the cutting corners in the fog filled marathon. Do you remember those? Where there's so much fog, and you know what? And if you wouldn't mind sharing something real quick, you've seen that in horse racing, have you not?
Oh, Tony, it's one of the great scandals of all time in horse racing. It was at Evangeline Downs, which is a little track down in like Lafayette, Louisiana area. And it's prone to, it's kind of coastal, or it's near the Gulf or close enough where they have a lot of fog issues. And they run at night. And there was a race where the race was a mile and 3/16, which is the distance basically of the Preakness, mm-hmm. but they go past the finish line twice. Mm-hmm. So the first time they came across the finish line, a guy on the 9 horse, and I should know his name, but I've forgotten it now. He decided that it was so foggy. And when you go to a horse race with fog, the only time you can really see the horses when they're right in front of you crossing the finish line, as they run by. This guy actually was able to pull his horse up and keep him quiet on the backstretch, actually near the far turn, and wait for the horses to come around again. And when he heard the hoofbeats, he kicked his horse in. And next thing you know, here they come down the stretch, and the announcer in a fog race is hilarious because they kind of just go, okay. And the last time we saw, the 8 was in front, and you know, he doesn't really know what to say. And then he goes, okay, they're coming into view, and it's the 9. You know, old Joe is got a huge lead. Nobody else even in the picture yet. If this guy had timed it a little better, he may have gotten away with it, but he won by like 20 lengths on a 50 or 60-to-1 shot. So people said, wait a minute, there's something rotten in Denmark here. And he was undone by the fact that thankfully they had left the photo finish camera on the first time through and found out he never even appeared. He basically, after the break, had pulled up his horse. So they watched all the horses come by the first time on the film and said, there's no 9 horse that went through. So they figured out what he did. But he almost got away with it, just like Rosie Ruiz in the New York City Marathon, mm-hmm. who ran the first mile, jumped on the subway, skipped the next 17 or 18 miles, and then she too blew it by having too big a lead.
Yep.
And there were monitors at the checkpoint. So people have tried to get away with those kind of scams for a long time.
The Connor Stallions situation, talk about that a little bit, because when I read this, I didn't really see the implications from a technology standpoint of where cheating was. And again, I didn't realize there are so many staff members now. And of course, you can have as many staff as you want. You can't have paid staff, but you can have as many people working on your staff. And Michigan's pushed the envelope now for years. And
Nick Saban kind of started that with his consultants.
He sure did. And you know, you talk about secondary violations, the fact that each team in the SEC usually reports 25 to 30 different secondary violations. They know they're cheating before they actually do it. And as long as you acknowledge it, then it's pretty much, we let it go. It's not a first violation or second. And, you know, when I read this, I much to the Houston Astros situation, I'm a baseball purist. I really didn't have an issue because of the technology we have. Anytime you get an opportunity to get an advantage on your opponent, I don't care how you do it. And again, technology is just unbelievably simplistic now on just videotaping everything, going back to look. I didn't really feel like that was actually cheating. The fact that you can actually, this is in the NCAA bylaws, you can game steal. It says game steal is not prohibited under game conditions. But if you do anything before the game to actually get an advantage to go into the game, then that's considered a violation. Can you talk a little bit, when you read the story, I had to read it 3 times this morning just to make sure I understood the implications of it.
Well, I'm just like you. My first thought was, you know, what's the big deal? I'm sure everybody's doing this, mm-hmm. but I guess the,
we're doing it better. Yeah,
exactly. Because, you know, let me tell you where the blame lies in this. And it's in the NFL now for almost 10 years. We've had quarterbacks and the captain, usually the middle linebacker of the defense, has a transmitter in their helmet that the coaches communicate the play calls to them. They don't have to do all the stupid signs. You know, in college football now, you look, there'll be an assistant coach, usually the backup quarterback, and sometimes just some other random guy, and they're all flashing signals. Only one of those guys is live. Mm-hmm. So that's been the big security, the way to protect that. But Tony, the fact that college football has been so slow to adopt the innovation of transmission in helmets, and I did a little digging into the reason for that. They came close to passing it last year, but once again, this gets back to the complete ineptitude and ineffectiveness of the NCAA. And if you follow the money in anything, and anyone who listens to my podcast Need to Know knows that that is my solution for solving any great mystery. Follow the money. Who's getting paid? Somebody in the NCAA with a helmet manufacturer that does not offer that feature, that's still kind of the predominant helmet in college football. I think it's just a delay to keep that particular product in the game, literally, so somebody continues to get kickbacks and payments. And I think that's the reason they have not approved the technology before. But without that, with the coach up in the booth able to communicate the play to the quarterback, you wouldn't have this scandal right now in college football.
That's true. I want to take you back, and because I mean, cheating is in all sports, and we're not talking just about college sports. We're not talking about horse racing. We're not even talking about the Lake Erie Walleye Tournament, which to me was one of those things where, you know, we always talk about a gentleman's sport. I mean, that's about as bad as it is. I will say this: growing up, there were two different cheating scandals that I was actually part of that did not help me sleep. One was through my father. We had this thing called, do you remember the old derbies in Boy Scouts? We had
the
Pinewood Derby. What exactly would fathers, you know, our fathers always made our Pinewood Derbies because obviously, you know, at the age of 8 and 9 years old, we didn't know how to use a wood shop. Fathers would do two things in Pinewood Derby. First of all, they realized that if not all four wheels were touching the track, you were getting less friction and your car would go faster. So if you could raise a wheel to ensure that only three wheels on the Pinewood Derby car you had were touching the track as opposed to four, your car was going to run faster. And then, of course, you had a weight system where you could actually put weights in the bottom of your car to add weight to your car so it would roll faster. And we used to have a checkpoint, and I remember doing this in Westchester, Ohio, where you had to have your car weighed at the end of each race to ensure that your car was within the limits. We never had that until, of course, someone cheated and thought, well, why don't I just put some extra weight in this particular car, much like the walleye tournament, and see if I can actually pull this off. So this was instilled in our lives early in the system, and I will share a story with you. I was 12 years old. Mason, Ohio, had the Mason Bowl, bowling tournament, of the year. And Mason Bowl was a little behind, the other bowlings where you actually used to have to set up the pins. My, great grandfather was actually a pin setter for some 50 years at Mason Bowl. He used to actually set the pins, until they got automatic pin setting. And I was in a bowling tournament when I was 12 years old. I'll never forget it. And I had about a 160 average, which for a 12-year-old was pretty good.
Strong.
And I came home with a 264 game. My father just beamed with pride, was so happy and so proud that his son bowled a 264, not only in just a bowling match, but also a tournament for 12-year-olds. And unbeknownst to him, and something that I realized, that my pin setter on my alley was not working correctly. And so I was credited in this 264 game with six strikes that I never bowled. And of
How
course,
about that?
Yeah. And so, you know, I'd have a 7-10 split, or I'd leave, you know, six pins. The pins would be knocked down. It would count as a strike. And of course, we had automatic scoring. And then, of course, the pins were reset as a new rack. And I bowled a 264. And of course, at the time, I didn't know what happened. It only took it two or three times to happen before I realized that this was cheating because I was not bowling these strikes. And of course, my father, it was probably the worst I'd ever been whipped. It was one of those, go get yourself a switch. We're going to teach you a
lesson. No.
And I'll never forget it because I went from being the host of the bowling world in Mason, Ohio, to being grounded for about a month and a half.
Because
I did not come clean as a 12-year-old after bowling a 264. And again, much like a horse winning by 30 lengths, something didn't add up. My dad's like, wait a minute, you get a 160 average, you bowled a 264. That's absolutely amazing. So cheating has been pretty much everywhere. So let me ask you this. And again, you mentioned at the top of the show, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. We're always looking for ways to push the envelope. And I'll use the tush push as another example. It is not cheating, but it is unstoppable. And it is something that everyone, not only in college, but professional football, including, of course, Philadelphia, who got the big victory against Miami earlier this week, has utilized. If they're within 2 yards of the first down, they're going to tush push. And I don't think it has been stopped even one time this year. And so as long as it's legal, you continue to do it. I remember when the Cincinnati Bengals indoctrinated the no huddle situation in their Super Bowl year back in the late 80s. And of course, that rule was changed for a brief period of time until, of course, now it's just a part of the game, the no huddle situation. But how do you keep from having these cheating scandals in sports? And is it something, you know, from a technology standpoint, because technology has gotten us so far, is it something that needs to be stopped?
Yeah, I'm so uncomfortable with the whole push by lineman of the quarterback and push the running back when he's being stood up. Because for years, Tony, this is a recent rule change.
Yeah.
For years, that was blatantly illegal. You could not assist the runner in any way. That was a 15-yard penalty back in the old days. I say old days. I think they changed this rule 4 or 5 years ago. And in this era of player safety, I don't know how running into a wall of 300-pound men while you're being pushed forward by 300-pound men is safe for the ball carrier. To me, it's just a bizarre decision they made, and it doesn't aid the game at all. I do not like that rule. So the football has just cheated itself by incorporating that, because really that was not the spirit of the game. This is not rugby.
Yeah.
I don't understand that rule, and I think it should be changed back to the way it was. You know, it's funny I think you and I are on the same page. I mean, you got to use every device available to you to be successful, short of just blatant cheating. While we're winding down, I wanted to be sure to mention what I think is one of the great cheating scandals of all time, and it didn't even involve the players. It was NBA referee Tim Donaghy,
yes,
who that was documented after they did an investigation, and he was even out in the open. He was betting with his own accounts and had footage of him actually walking into facilities and placing thousands of bets over a 7 or 8 year period while he was an active referee in the NBA, many on games that he was officiating. Mm-hmm. How bad does that fish stink? That's probably the worst cheating scandal in sports history. And a lot of people have already forgotten about it, although it just happened in 2007, I think. But that was a really bad one. If the officials, which of course there are, every time your team loses, ask Alabama fans about last year's Tennessee game in Knoxville, where they had 17 penalties. They'll still tell you that we got robbed. The refs took that away from us, So fans still think that they're being cheated by the system, but the Tim Donaghy scandal, probably the worst one of all time.
I would totally agree with you. And the fact that you had a guy on the inside actually calling his own games. And of course, we've mentioned Pete Rose on the show many times. He, to this day, yes, still says that he did not bet against his baseball team, which is really hard to believe. But even when you're betting on your own team, you do manage a little differently going through those games. I think from a technology standpoint, and again, this Michigan situation, it is the first story on ESPN.com this morning. I don't know if it's a situation where you actually have a reprimand of this guy and he's losing his job, because I don't think that a guy that's on the Michigan staff is actually taking this upon himself to then go to Coach Harbaugh and say, listen, I have some information I think is going to be beneficial for the Penn State or Ohio State game coming up. I think this is coming from somewhere else. And so, of course, like you said, we're going to have to follow the money. We're going to have to find out where that's actually coming from. But then again, you can certainly make an argument. What a brilliant move, because, next to those 30 different seats that he bought, there are some 95 to 100,000 fans who could be doing the same exact thing. Who doesn't hold their phones up? I mean, I tape plays. I watch plays whenever there's something near the goal line. I'll always hold my phone up because I want to get the score on tape. There are so many people doing the same exact thing, which is totally legal because they're not considered Michigan staffers. And so, and that information is anywhere. It's accessible to anybody. That goes for boosters, that goes for alumni, that goes for anybody. And again, you would think with the technology we have, there are coaches that's all they do. They're hired just to look at tape of teams and how they perform in the past and how they're going to perform in the future. So you have an edge up. I don't know how taking video coverage of that is actually considered cheating.
Yeah, because you're breaking down every play, every tendency. You're putting statistical information and data into, and you've got multiple people breaking down all different aspects of the game. That's, to me, an extension of that, of just how that team approaches things. So I'm not really appalled. And people that are delusional enough to say, well, the NCAA is going to step in and take action here, Michigan's probably not going to be eligible for the playoffs. The NCAA has no teeth.
No.
And particularly for football, and they move at a glacial pace. I think they're still investigating the 1972 Orange Bowl, and we'll have a ruling shortly. So the bottom line is Michigan's going to get away with this. Lex Luthor's going to live to fight another day. But I'm like you. I don't find this to be particularly egregious. But people that don't like the Big Ten, and believe me, I'm right in the middle of that crowd. It seems like the Big Ten has always got this kind of scandal-ridden league with a lot of things going on. I admit it. I'm the ultimate SEC homer. My broadcast partner on my Sunday morning show, Terry Quillian, says she wants I was an SEC homer put on her gravestone. So that's the way we approach things. It's the Big Ten, so we're against them. But I don't think this is that big a deal.
No cheating on this show, baby. We give you fresh shows every single week. We could have just run an encore, but no, we get after it every single week. We want to make sure we bring you the best and live stuff every single week here on TKR and the Kiefer and Curry Show. And of course, we also do that on television, ABC 3340. We have a show called The Starting Lineup with Kiefer and Curry. We have the legend who, of course, gets after it. Bama looked really good in the second half of their ball game this past week. The Auburn Tigers came up a little short. So do the UAB Blazers. We'll talk about all those games, not to mention the games coming up this weekend. Check us out on ABC 3340, 10:30 to 11 o'clock every Saturday morning, ABC 3340. It is a great show, and it is a local show, so you get the local feel as opposed to the national views right here in the Birmingham area. So we'll look forward to that. Kiefer and Curry Show, we do it every single week. I'll let you pick a topic next week. Until next week, my friend, I appreciate you.
Tony, it's great. And folks, Tony Curry has picked five best bet winners in a row.
Yes.
He is on fire. Tune in and get this week's pick.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.